Today I'm talking with Aaron Smith, who's a research specialist at the Pew Research Center's Internet and American Life Project, and he's an author of a report based on a new national phone survey. Good morning, Aaron.
Hi, Alex. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's exciting to have you. So anyone who's been watching this space knows that a lot of interesting things are happening online with government now. Government agencies have begun to open up their data to the public. That includes state, local, and certainly the federal level with sites like data.gov, and many more citizens are showing interest and are engaged. Can you break down the high points of the study and kind of where some of the surprise information was to you?
Absolutely. Well, you touched on the big surprise right off the bat. We wanted to set out, and one of the things we wanted to do in the survey was get an initial read on engagement with government data. And so we asked questions, asking people they had done things like online to spending from the stimulus package, or read the text of inflation, go to sites like data.gov, like you mentioned, or look up, you know, campaign contributions online. And we were expecting a fair amount of people to be involved in that, but the overall number that we found was much, much higher than I think any of us expected over here. And there's few genuine surprises in our work, even though we sometimes say there are. But when we saw that 40% of online adults have gone online in the last year to look for data about the business of government, that was a really striking finding to us, and I think it's indicative of something that we've seen throughout our recent research, which is that people are increasingly going around sort of established intermediaries, and they're going to the source for online data, and they're doing that whether it's, you know, data about a health condition that they might have, or data about the presidential race, as we saw in the 2008 campaign, and now we're seeing the same thing in the context of government. So it's striking, and I think it was something that really jumped out at us, that really took us aback a little bit when we got this data back in.
So yeah, the big four that came out of that, or going to see how stimulus money is being sent. That was 23% of internet users. That
right.
Recovery.gov. They went to read or download the text of legislation. It's 23%. That obviously is a really big deal in the context of healthcare reform. But
right, and that's and just to specify there, this was when we fielded this survey. This was right at the sort of the peak of the healthcare debate. So yeah, we suspect that the healthcare bill, which, you know, obviously be almost became a prop in the debate on healthcare legislation. We suspect that the healthcare bill had a lot to do with that.
And then in terms of, you know, how the internet has been changing, the read-write web, et cetera, not to give read-write web too big of a plug as a great blog, but it's also the concept people can write back.
Right.
It seems like there's a change in terms of how people are accessing government information, particularly through social media. What's going on there?
Absolutely. So we asked about two separate aspects of that. And so the first thing we wanted to get a sense of is the extent to which citizens are going online for government information outside of the context of the standard government website. So we wanted to know whether they were using things like blogs and social networking sites and online video and text messaging to get government information. And what we found was that about 1 in 3 online adults were using these tools to get information about the business of government. So they were signing up for text messaging alerts and becoming a fan of government agencies on social networking sites. The second step of that we wanted to get a sense of is the extent to which people were really participating in the broader debate around government issues. So, you know, speaking back to government and interacting with their fellow citizens online. And what we found there is that about a quarter of internet users have participated in that broader debate around government policies. Although much of that is at least currently occurring outside of the context of quote-unquote official government channels like fan pages and government blogs that are hosted on government websites. So what you see is a lot of folks posting their own content about government policies or issues online, joining up with other citizens in an effort to change government policies, doing things of that nature, in addition to a fairly small number who are at least at the moment, you know, commenting on government agency blogs, posting things on government fan pages on social networking sites and so forth.
Did you get any data on mobile usage or apps?
We did a little bit of we asked a few questions, at least at the moment, not on apps, but we did ask about text messaging. And while, at least at the moment, it's a little bit of a smaller piece of the puzzle than, say, online video or email alerts, we did find a fair amount of interest in engagement with government using text messaging and using mobile tools. And just to give a little plug for some future work that we're doing, we're actually going to take a little deeper look at the applications issue and some research that we're conducting this spring. So we're hoping to get a better read on that moving forward.
Now, there's something else that jumped out at me in looking through the report, and it's that there is actually a double-edged racial component here and class component. First is that there is still the extant digital divide issue. People who have more money, which is traditionally associated with the white side of America, show conversely higher rates of usage and participation in these contexts. That said, the embrace of social media by government was especially appreciated by traditional minorities, including African Americans and Hispanics, in terms of their thinking about whether it makes government more accessible and helps people to be more informed about what government agencies are doing. So, in fact, they say it's very important. And then the conclusion of the report is that it might offer the ability for agencies to reach underserved populations in a way that's not currently occurring with other online offerings. What's going on there?
Well, yeah, and that's another really big finding, and I think it's a really one of the really important findings of this work is exactly that, the issue of sort of digital divide issues as it pertains to minority groups and lower income Americans. And so what we found there is, as you alluded to, is that if you look at if you compare whites to minorities or high income Americans to lower income Americans on things like participating in that sort of broader online debate around government policies or going online for government data, even things like getting information or completing transactions on government websites, there tends to be at least a measurable gap. Some of them are more skewed towards the sort of economic elites than others, but there's a definite difference between participation by whites and minorities and higher income and lower income Americans. You see a really different story when you look at engagement using sort of social media in a broad context. So when you look at the percentage of whites, African Americans, and Hispanics who watch videos on government websites or sign up to get text message alerts or follow government agencies on blogs or social networking sites, all three of those groups do those things at basically the same rate. So there isn't the same gap that you see with some other online government offerings. The same is true for high and low income Americans. There's a much smaller gap when it comes to those sort of participatory interactive modes of engagement than there are with some of the other online government activities we looked at. So not only are they participating at a higher rate, their attitudes are also a lot different. We asked a series of questions trying to get a sense of what did people feel about or what did they think about this whole issue of government interacting using things like text messaging and social networking sites and Twitter. And so we asked them for a series of attitudes and asked them to sort of agree or disagree with some statements. And what we found, the racial breakdowns on that were really, really interesting. African Americans and Latinos were much more likely than whites to agree with the statement that engagement using these new digital tools helps people be more informed about what government is doing. They were much more likely to agree that this type of engagement makes government more accessible. And they were also much more likely to say that it's very important for government agencies and officials to engage citizens using tools like Facebook and Twitter and blogs and so forth. So not only do we see a much more balanced level of participation when it comes to these tools with respect to minority Americans, their attitudes are much more positive about them as well. And I think that it's an interesting finding and it's an important finding. And it's something that, we really started picking up on during the 2008 election. younger adults, minority Americans, those lower levels of income. We're very active on these tools, using these tools during the election, and we've sort of seen that carry forward. And I think that's something that offers a great deal of promise in terms of government thinking about how to reach some of those groups that they may not be as served with existing offerings.
And just to get a little bit wonky into the research, I say that N was 2,258 adults 18 and older. Of that, I think something like 226 were Black, 205 were Hispanic.
Correct.
1,691 were white. How does that map to what our understanding of the actual demographics are around the country right now?
We obviously, when you conduct a telephone survey, you tend to get a somewhat skewed sample. So the people who answer in complete telephone surveys, they tend to be a little older than the overall population. They tend to be whiter than the overall population. They tend to be more female than the overall population. So they've got some differences from what we know to be the actual representation in the population. So what we do in our research here at the Pew Research Center is we use some statistical techniques to basically true those demographics up to the actual population figures. So in all of our work, whenever we present our findings, all of our percentages that we give are based on what we call a weighted sample that brings the demographic parameters of who we talk to up so that it matches with the what we know to exist in the country at large. So it's sort of we were able to balance that out on the back end, as it were, and in that way can sort of give a demographically balanced and representative look at what people are thinking out there.
Okay, thank you. And so beyond the interesting flattening there and broad interest in how these particularly new channels can allow new kinds of access in different places that are traditionally underserved, no matter who it is and where they are, the number one reason or way, rather, that they're getting to these sites is through search engines. And that isn't a huge shock. What's going on there?
Yeah. So one of the series of questions we asked is we wanted to get a sense of on people's the most recent government website interaction that folks had. We wanted to know how they got there, where they went, and once they got there, how successful they were. And when we asked this question previously in 2003. We found that search engines were far and away the number one way that folks were reaching their destinations, and we found almost exactly the same thing this time around. Nearly half of folks who could remember their most recent government interaction got there by searching for what they were looking for on a search engine, and that's very much in line with our previous work, and it's in line with a lot of our other work in other areas as well, which is that when people are looking for information, sometimes they'll go to a place that they've been to before, sometimes they'll go to a place that they saw in a notice or an email or a friend or a family member told them about. But by and large, if they need to find information on their tax bill, they'll search tax information or IRS in their search engine of choice and get to their destination that way. So that's very much in line with what we found in previous years and in other areas of online life as well, which is that search is generally the default entry point to all sorts of information and other types of activities that people take part in.
It certainly sounds like that means search engine optimization is going to be an important consideration for government officials, agencies, and anyone writing about this or otherwise trying to get information out. So the next acronym that will be important here in D.C. is SEO, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. There are people getting to these sites in other ways, but search is clearly the top option when people need government information. They go and punch it into Bing or Google or Yahoo or whichever engine they use and get there that way.
So, this in 2010, it's probably not a shock that you found out that the use of government websites for information and transactions is extremely widespread. You know, you reported 82% of online adults went to a government website to get information or complete a transaction in the 12 months preceding your survey.
Right.
What was the number one thing they went for, and what other sorts of things are they going to?
The two main things that they were looking for, pretty much tied for the number one thing that people were doing. Not surprisingly, a lot of them were looking for government agency services. So they wanted to know what services an agency provides. 46% of online adults had done that. The other big thing that they were looking for is information about public policies or important issues. Almost half, 48% of online adults had done that. So services and what's going on with policies or issues are the two big ones. But we saw them doing a whole lot of things, actually. 41% had gone online to get forms, so tax forms, health forms, student aid forms. 35% had researched government documents or statistics. So again, we go back to the issue of that desire for government data. And we saw a lot of people going online to sort of complete transactions, and that was actually where we saw a lot of growth between the earlier part of the decade and now. Quite sizable numbers of people are going online to do things like renew driver's licenses or auto registrations, or apply for jobs, or pay fines, get recreational licenses like hunting or fishing licenses. So that's where we've seen over the last several years, as we kind of ask these questions periodically, where we've seen a lot of growth as particularly, I think, local government have brought things like driver's license registrations and being able to reserve parks and camping sites and things of that nature. As they've brought a lot of those services online in the last few years, we've seen a lot of growth between 2001 and 2003 and now in terms of the number of people going online to complete those sort of simple transactions that are, just so much easier and more pleasant than standing in line at the DMV or sending in an application and waiting for it to come back in the mail. So that's where we saw a lot of growth. But clearly, the main things that people are doing are looking for information about issues that are important to them and going online to find and access government services.
So people aren't just reading; they're also doing things, and the growth trend there is pretty clear.
Absolutely.
And it jumped out at me, renewing driver's licenses and auto registrations. One third of all internet users are doing that online. So clearly, if it's available, people will go and do it. And if anyone's ever been to the DMV, you know why.
Yes, absolutely.
even the best ones, you're most likely much better off doing it at home if you possibly can. So the transactional aspect is definitely changing. That said, it did seem pretty clear, too, that people still want to be able to use offline avenues for government engagement if they need to. So, more than half the people still did contact agencies or officials using other means, telephones, letters, in person, and a lot of people still wanted to pick up the phone. So that the takeaway is what, always provide a contact number?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was, I think there's a lot of things in here, a lot of findings in here that should be getting government folks really excited. If there's a challenge in all of this, it's that you can't really let up anywhere anymore. People want to ask your information and access your services in all kinds of ways, and that includes offline means as well. And we saw that very clearly when we asked people how they preferred to get in contact with government. Among the population as a whole, the telephone was actually the number one way people preferred to get in contact. When you look at the online population, they actually prefer the internet, but a fairly sizable number still like to be able to pick up the phone or go see someone in person. And that particularly, based on previous research that we've done, that particularly rises with sort of the urgency and complexity of the issue. So the example that I like to use is that I love nothing better than being able to file my taxes online, but when I was a victim of identity theft and someone began filing fraudulent tax returns in my name, you better believe I wanted to be able to pick up the phone and call somebody and work through that in a person-to-person way. So even among the people who are really active online and do a whole range of online activities, those folks are still very much calling government on the phone, going in and talking to people in person, and still need, you know, particularly as things get get complicated, as things start getting urgent, they still really want and need that level of offline contact as well. So it definitely email is great. Being able to get my license renewed on the website is fantastic. But when there's a problem, I definitely want to be able to get someone on the line, and there's certainly a group that obviously, either isn't online or doesn't have the level of access to, allow them to do a lot of these services. So for those groups, those offline means are important as well.
Yeah, there was something that was, in this particular part of the report that was interesting, that there is a difference between broadband and wireless internet users. So if you compare people who have access to high-speed internet versus those who have home dial-up, there's a shift. So what does that mean for the digital divide or the FCC's broadband plans, and what's the issues are around that?
Well, and I think when you look at the FCC's plan, one of the key planks of their rationale for why we need to extend broadband services is to allow for that or facilitate that citizen to government interaction and that sort of broader civic engagement between citizens. And it's something that we found since we began conducting this research way back in 2000 that as people get access to high-speed, always-on connections. We're seeing the same thing now with mobile access. That it opens up a whole range of activities and services that people can take part in that just aren't really feasible using a slow dial-up connection or accessing a computer at the library, for instance. Clearly the FCC is thinking about this. But it's been a truism since the day we started this that broadband users and now wireless internet users are much different in what they do and take part in a much greater range of activities in all areas, whether that's entertainment, news, health, or government, than folks who aren't online or don't have access to that type of high speed connection. So clearly the FCC. Is seeing the same thing and sees that sees access to government services and access to sort of civic activities as a key reason to promote the expansion of these technologies.
One of the truisms about life that's frequently cited is that the only two things you can't avoid are death and taxes. And when you look at what respondents say about the last website they visited, that appears to be true as well. Can you talk about what the most recent government website interaction was with different folks?
Sure. So, like I said, we asked our respondents if they could remember the last specific government website they did they went to, and then we asked them where they went. And the first thing, honestly, we actually asked that question almost as a test because we weren't entirely sure whether people knew what they meant by a government website. And we were actually one of the other surprises in this, which I realize you didn't ask, but I think it's worth pointing out, is that a very small number of people mentioned a site that clearly wasn't a government website. And I think that's one of the questions that I heard a lot in talking with folks in government during this the design phase of this survey, was that they weren't really sure if people knew when they were at a government website or not. And I think clearly, at least based on this, they clearly do, and they've got a really good read on where they're going and what they're looking for. But to get to your specific question, when we asked them the last place they went, not surprisingly, federal agencies sort of led the pack. About a third of the folks who remembered their most recent interaction said that they went to the agency, to the website of a federal agency. And in there, again, not surprisingly, the two sort of biggies were the Social Security Administration and the IRS. And I think that makes sense. Those are sort of the two agencies that you know you are sort of unavoidable no matter what you do or who you are. Everyone pays into Social Security and everyone has to pay their taxes. So those were the two the ones that were most commonly mentioned. But there were a lot of other sites even within the federal government that folks mentioned, things like Immigration and Naturalization Services, FBI and Department of Homeland Security, CDC and NIH, Veterans Administration, and then the range there. We literally got 1,700 responses on this question that ranged across the board. Anything you can imagine. It was really indicative of just the range of services and the range of agencies that Americans are currently accessing online. And it was actually pretty fascinating. I couldn't even include all of the responses that they gave on that question in this report.
And interestingly, when they go to these sites, by and large, it appears to be a satisfactory experience, at least in terms of what people are able to accomplish. The research that you conducted and results says that most people generally accomplish most or all of what they want to do in government websites. So they're finding them and doing stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. When we asked, we did the Where did you go? How did you get there? And then the follow-up question that was, how much of what you were doing or going to do did you succeed in doing? And only 5% of those folks who went to one of the sites said that they were totally unsuccessful in what they were trying to do. Half said, I did everything I needed to do. I was good to go. About another quarter said that they achieved most of what they wanted to do. So a sizable majority said that they were able to accomplish most or everything of what they were trying to do. And it was actually fairly interesting. There was very little variation on that question. Seniors were about as likely to be successful in what they were trying to do as younger adults. Minorities were about as successful as whites. Lower income Americans were about as successful as high income Americans. So I thought that was, I was expecting a little more variation there, but in general, once people find what they're looking for and get to the site that they're trying to go to, they tend to be fairly successful. And that was actually true, regardless of what type of site it was, whether it was a local site or a state site or a federal site, people were generally fairly successful with what they were trying to do. So I think that's, if you're looking for, positives in terms of things that government is doing right, I think that shows that, they're doing a fairly good job of making information available in a way that's relevant and meaningful to people and, sort of giving them what they need and letting them go on their way. And I think that sort of comes through in what we found in our work.
This is interesting, too, in terms of what people find to be successful or useful. And I think that there's been a reasonable amount of debate, certainly within government agencies and with people who are watching them, about the effectiveness of online outreach and what people are doing and what's resonating with them. And in looking over how internet users are actually behaving, what they're doing, the three activities that the heavy users report doing the most are reading a government blog, signing up for email alerts, and watching videos. So does that imply that those are the areas that government media people should be focusing more upon, or do you see growth in other things like text messages, Twitter, setting up fan pages, et cetera? What does the data tell us about that?
Yeah, so what that tells us, that basically tells us what people are doing now. And I think when I, as I follow this issue, I think things like blogs, hosting a blog on your agency website, posting videos on your site, those are very easy things and sort of things that people in government and decision makers in the sort of the government web space, that's something that's sort of easy for people to wrap their heads around. And there's sort of a clear and obvious case for that. In addition to that, blogs and online video and things like that, they've been around for a while. So decision makers at the government level, those are things that it's easy for them to sort of make a business case for. And on the consumer side, a lot of people are reading blogs about politics or about health or about other issues. tons of people are watching online videos. So importing those types of things to the government space, I think, is, it's a simple, easy thing to understand that sort of resonates with both sides of the equation. At least at the moment, things like, becoming a fan of a government agency on a social networking site, or signing up for text message alerts, or following government agencies on Twitter. Those aren't currently as popular as, reading blogs, watching videos, or signing up for emails. But, I think at the same time, those are fairly nascent in terms of both familiarity with them within the government space. I think a lot of government agencies are currently doing some experimentation with how best to reach people. I'm not sure that anyone's quite hit the sweet spot on that yet, although there's some really interesting things going on there. And in general, with the exception of of social networking sites, they haven't quite been around as much, and they haven't become quite as mainstream within the broader population. So I think as government agencies become more familiar with how best to engage people using things like text messaging or Twitter, and as more Americans sort of adopt and become familiar with those technologies, I think you could certainly see more people using those tools in the future to get that type of government information. And certainly when we ask people about it, we do see a fair amount of interest in engagement using those channels. So at least at the moment, the thing that's most most used on the quote unquote social media space are blog videos and email. But I think there is certainly room for growth in other areas in terms of social networking and text messaging and Twitter and other tools that still have yet to be tapped. And I think if we do this a similar study in a couple of years, I think these numbers might look potentially very different.
You see growth patterns in those areas. It's just simply the relative usage levels compared to the established email, blogs, and video, which have been around for years and years, is different. That's the takeaway.
Yeah, and also, I think government is still experimenting with how best to engage people using social networking sites and text messaging. Again, it's easy to it's sort of simple to do a government blog. It's a very intuitive thing to post a video of our director's speech on our website. Figuring out how best to engage people using text messaging is a little more challenging. And I think as as government sort of figures out how best to do things like that you could potentially see more people doing that. Of course, you could also, everyone could stop using social networking sites tomorrow, and government could decide that it's not worthwhile. So we always try to refrain from being in the prediction business. But certainly when you look at the differences between things like social networking sites and text messaging, in terms of why they're not as common at the moment as things like blogs and online video, I think those are some of the factors at play.
I think the only way people are going to stop using social networking tomorrow is if the internet goes down.
Yeah, Bill, you never know. I think we might have said the same thing about Friendster a few years ago. And I think the specific sites will change, but certainly the overall trend on the internet is clearly in the direction of more social, more sharing, more contributing as opposed to less. So in that sense, we don't see that going anywhere anytime soon.
Okay, so last question, and this has been a great deep dive. And if anyone's made it this far into the conversation, assuming that the audio quality wasn't so artifacted I couldn't use it, this is an interesting one because, recent other research from other esteemed institutions has said that trust in government is at historic lows right now. People really don't have a great deal of faith in openness and accountability, despite things like the Open Government Initiative, despite these areas. That said, when you look at people who are heavy government data users, or look at people who are online, their attitudes that about government in terms of it being more open and accountable are different than people who are not online, or the people who are online but not heavy government data users. So there is some ideological diversity within that result. So what's going on there?
That was a really fascinating question, and one that I think we haven't necessarily quite wrapped our heads around yet. But you're absolutely right. When you look at people who go online for government data, so that was what we were talking about way back at the beginning of this podcast, in terms of getting, stimulus spending and really raw government data about the business of government. When you look at those folks, they tend to have fairly positive levels about the openness and accountability of government. But the partisan splits, as you noted, are really interesting. So, to give the quick synopsis for your listeners, and you can find this the full details in the report. But basically, Democrats who use online government services are giving the government huge credit for making that data available and putting it out there. Whereas if you look at Republicans or independents who lean Republican, they're generally sort of mistrustworthy or mistrusting across the board. They don't see the government as more open and accountable, regardless of whether they use this online data or not. And I think that fits with some research that our colleagues over at the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press just put out last week. They went all the way back to data, public opinion data, for as far back as the Eisenhower administration. And basically, what they found is that people tend to trust the government when their party is in power, and they tend to distrust it when the other party is in power. And that sort of makes intuitive sense. But they also found that while that's true for people in both parties, that it's especially true for Republican voters. So Republican voters really like the government when Republicans are in office, and they really don't like it much when Democrats are in office. And I think, you've sort of seen that play out over the last few years here. What we see happening is that, at least at the moment, when you look at Democratic voters, they're giving credit to the government for making that data out there. When you look at Republican voters, they're a little bit tougher sell. I guess the upshot to government is, if you put your data out there, people will clearly use it. Conservative Republicans are some of the most intense users of this type of data. You just can't always expect them to actually give you credit for it, I guess, is is the takeaway from that, or give you credit for actually being more open and accountable as a result of putting that out there. So, as long as they're not necessarily expecting accolades for making that available and are content with just, allowing people to use it and put it to the purposes that they're most interested in, I think people find it valuable, and clearly there's a huge amount of interest there.
Great. And for people who want to download the report themselves, which URL should they go to?
If you go to www.pewinternet.org, so that's pewinternet.org, on Tuesday, April 27th, we'll have the report front and center on our homepage, and you can download it and check it out. And anyone who has questions, my contact info will be on there, and we love to hear from folks.
Okay, so that was Aaron Smith, a research specialist at the Pew Research Center's Internet and American Life Project, talking about new research on the ways that Americans are using government services and information online.